Hello and welcome to episode 24 of the Thundercast. On today's show, we're picking through the rubble of E3 2013 with our thoughts on everything that happened. I'm Matthew Storey, and joining me today I have Shane Ryan.
Hello.
And for the first time in the Thundercast, our website's creator, Philip Morton.
Hey.
So E3 2013 has been and gone now. We've had all of the announcements, all the catfights and backstabbing and whatever, and we know a lot about what the next generation of video game consoles is going to bring to the table. It's worth pointing out that on this podcast, we're going to be focusing on the games and the press conferences. We'll dive deeper into lots of the philosophies behind the consoles and DRM issues and things like that in a future podcast. But Phil, you were there on the show floor this year, and I know you've been to previous E3s. How was the atmosphere at this E3? Were people excited about the PS4 and Xbox One, or was that enthusiasm drowned out somewhat by the DRM debacle?
Well, all these press conferences, it's never, people never get super, super excited. It was always kind of like polite applause. And the Microsoft one was like that, and Microsoft, it was very muted because people were, people were just... it wasn't a very good presentation. They didn't really set out their vision for what they want the Xbox One to be.
Yeah.
They just showed some games, but I think a typical thing was at the end they showed Titanfall and then it just stops. Like no one came back on stage at the end to wrap up and say, so, we've shown you all these games and we've shown you all this other stuff and here's our vision for the future and, we're all excited, have a good E3. It just stopped. And I think the main thing from the Microsoft thing, Microsoft conference was when they announced the price, it was just like everyone's whispering to the person next door going, what are they thinking? Absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
And then, the rest of the day, the kind of middle of the day, everyone was going, right, we know pretty much everything from Microsoft and we know next to nothing about Sony. So I couldn't wait to hear what the price was.
Yeah.
And of course, they kind of in the Sony press conference, they had all the games and all that stuff. But throughout it, I was like, "Come on, what's the price? What's the price? What's the price?" And when they brought out that slide saying that PS4 is going to support used games, and if you've seen the video, it's like a 30-second. Everyone's like cheering and clapping, and it seems a bit fake, especially since E3 audiences aren't usually that excitable. But I can tell you, like everyone was just. Like, so amused by what they were doing. It was just, all of us cheering. And when they went kind of point by point through almost like Microsoft policy and just said, we're doing the opposite of that, loads of cheers. And then when they brought out the kind of the bomb of the price, I mean, it was pretty much like a big punch in Microsoft's face.
It very much felt like Sony looked at what Microsoft did and thought, how can we win people over? How can we impress people? How can we get people to want the PS4? Which perfectly makes sense. But Microsoft's press conference, like you said, it was very much focused on the games. And I think Microsoft thought that would put them in good stead because that's what people wanted after their Xbox One reveal.
Well,
lots of people were saying that the press conference should just be about games because they're focused on so many of the other console features during their reveal show.
I think that's... It's true, but it's also Microsoft said at the conference, we're going to give you games, presuming. And if you watch the interviews afterwards, I mean, they cancelled a lot of their roundtable interviews and just had their kind of events manager, whose name is just Major Nelson, who did a lot of kind of some interviews on the side. And basically, whenever someone asked him a hard question, his answer, I mean, I'm being a bit hyperbolic here, but his answer was, have you seen Titanfall? And the fact that they finished on Titanfall really means that, the guys that were sitting around the table making these decisions thought, no, people are going to see this game and they're going to go, I don't care. Just take all my money. I don't care about anything else. Give me this one game for the next 6 years. And I just think that they've been so locked away trying to develop all these systems and think about stuff that they've just forgotten how are people going to actually react. So they came out with loads of games and they had way more games than Sony. And if you think about it on a games basis, there was a lot. But then everyone's just like, well, like Phil said, there was that kind of still a bit of silence about the fact that they didn't even address anything else.
Yeah, I think that's the issue. I think the noise around the whole DRM issue has been so loud. in games journalism and games media, that they really needed to come out and address that and say something about it. But obviously, at the time, they hadn't changed their policy, which obviously they have done now. So they figured that focusing on the games, that's how we're going to get people to be interested in the console. But that didn't seem to be enough at E3 from the outsider's perspective, just watching all the impressions. Mm-hmm. People were much more impressed by Sony's no DRM policy and the price point of the console. And Phil, you were there at console and you were there at the show and you've said it, that people were genuinely cheering and getting excited at the Sony's conference, which is something that's strange for E3.
Yeah, and the important thing as well is that, you know, these both companies are going to make mistakes in the next kind of 18 months, and when they do, people are going to need to give them the benefit of the doubt, and the two companies aren't going to kind of earn that right unless they set out the vision, because, you know, I think it's pretty clear most people at the moment, they kind of trust Sony, like they're going the right direction with the PS4. So if they muck up something and have to reverse it or something happens, people are going to be like, okay, that's an issue, but I kind of trust that they're going the right direction. Whereas at the moment, Microsoft, like everyone's so suspicious that they just don't have the right to make any mistakes now. Like you know, you're not going to sort of buy the console and be like, okay, it's not perfect now, but they'll get it right. Like, you know, will they? I don't know. Whereas Sony, like the exclusive games lineup is not great, but you know that they're on the right track and you kind of, you can kind of give them the benefit of the doubt for now, whereas, yeah, Microsoft, they don't have that.
It's interesting that it's become a game of politics and that no games are really cheered for, but a used game policy was. And it's kind of like, you know, gaming and the hobby has been just turned into some sort of big political race. And the fact is they're both going to go digital by the end of the generation, and Sony is pushing it subversively just as much as Microsoft. But Microsoft kind of came out and went, this is what you're going to do, and you're going to do it now, and this is how we wanted you to do it. And they didn't realise that people are just going to, when they get told what to do, they don't like it. Whereas if Sony just keeps saying, look, we've got great sales online, digital only, come over here, shop here. And so it's just, but there's,
it's
just, like
it's
you said,
this
there's like
kind of
go on.
It's this weird kind of brand loyalty and the whole concept of the video game wars, the console wars, and people have
like
lots
football
of love
teams.
For Microsoft or lots of love for Sony. Yeah, people instantly attach to these companies and think that they're great, or Sony's great because they don't have a DRM policy. Well, actually, Sony's going to be thinking about what's best for them as a company, and obviously what's best for them at that point in time was to say, we don't have DRM, because they knew that consumers were being weren't happy with what Microsoft was saying.
Well,
so
they
that
kind
was
of already do, because they're already ahead. They already have day one digital downloads that you can't trade or rent.
Yeah.
So in theory, that's the ahead. It's just Microsoft said it.
This is what I was going to come on to. Sony, Jack Trenton came out and said that they're not going to stop third-party publishers from implementing some form of DRM if they want to. It's just Sony first-party aren't going to have any DRM restrictions on those games.
So, back to the games. We go too much at angle.
Yeah, so, let's come on to Nintendo's press conference and some of the third-party press conferences before we go and focus on specifically about games.
Okay.
So, did you attend the Nintendo press conference? Well, it wasn't a Nintendo press conference, was there? But did you attend any of the third-party press conferences this year, Phil?
You know, in Nintendo, like, I didn't even go to their booth because they're so irrelevant. I just don't care. Like, the hardware, no one's bought it because no one even knows what the Wii U is.
Yeah.
And the games, it's the same old stuff. Like, I talked to another journalist after he came back from Nintendo's kind of behind closed doors event. And I said, you know, what was the kind of the main news? What was the big story? And he's like, there's three new characters in Smash Brothers and one of them's Mega Man. And I'm like, what?
It's so
ridiculous.
I think half our listeners just tuned out.
So yeah, it's just they're irrelevant. You know, they're basically in denial at the moment.
Yeah, Nintendo really does seem like they have like blinkers on. They're tunnel vision. They don't really pay any attention to what anyone else is doing. They stick with the age-old Nintendo philosophy of we create our own hardware, we get Nintendo first-party games on the hardware, we'll sell. But the sales figures of the Wii U have shown that that isn't really working this generation, because the Wii U's gimmick isn't really taking off with the mass market.
But they do make a profit, which is why they're stubborn.
They do make a profit,
They're the only company that continually makes a hardware profit, and that is why they're so stubborn.
And historically, they've always made profit off their consoles, so they have a lot of money to back them up, and the relative non-success of the Wii U isn't going to cripple them. But I think that this year's, not their non-press conference, their Nintendo Direct showing, there wasn't anything there to really surprise anyone. There wasn't anything new or exciting. It feels like they're playing it very safe when they really need to be taking chances to boost the Wii U sales. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have a few third-party titles. They have things like Bayonetta and the wonderful 101. Okay, we knew about them already. What's on the Wii U that's
really
exciting?
They should have been out.
Smash Brothers? Yeah, they should have been out by now, yeah. I mean, there's Smash Brothers, there's Mario Kart, there's a new Mario game. Fabulous. I've played them all before. What's really different? And I didn't really see anything like that from Nintendo.
People complain about lots of kind of series not being innovative, like, oh, it's the same old Call of Duty, same old FIFA, but that's what Nintendo do all the time. It's all they do, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, they used to actually take some chances and try something new. I mean, on the GameCube, they came out with games like Luigi's Mansion, Pikmin. Eternal Darkness. They were new games, and they had new ideas in them, new mechanics, new gameplay. And that's kind of what Nintendo used to be good at. And now they just seem like they're so, I don't know, conservative and worried about putting a foot wrong because the Wii U's not being successful. But there was nothing there to excite me.
They sort themselves in the corner with the gamepad, because, I mean, even when I played it before launch and before I said, you know, this is just a gimmick. You can only look at one screen. So what's the point of boosting the cost of a console with a second screen? You can only look at one. I mean, if it's like now what's happening with like Microsoft and Sony is they're saying, okay, well, actually Microsoft has said that if people make a game for Xbox One, it has to have smart glass support. It has to have something in it. So you can use your phone or your tablet. But that's additional, whereas this is in it and it just, and even the Nintendo first party games aren't coming out with anything that's ultra relevant for its existence.
They really haven't shown, and this year's E3 proved it again, they haven't got anything that really shows why that second screen is essential to the gameplay experience. It's good. It's good for having maps on. I don't think it's that good for having maps on, to be honest with you, because it's annoying
to look down
the screens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And people have said that the secondary screen currently for Mario Kart is the horn. So you tap the touchpad, dark screen, and it beeps the horn. You've already got about 8-9 buttons on the pad. You don't need to put it on the... It's even worse because you have to move your hand off something to... give up with that idea.
Fantastic. But let's just come back to the actual Nintendo Direct. I think it's quite interesting that Nintendo chose to go with a Direct this year instead of a press conference. Obviously, they did that because a business decision. These Sony and Microsoft have got consoles coming out. They've got lots of big news. Nintendo clearly didn't have that much big news to show off.
Can you imagine
that
in E3 stage? I don't think
exactly,
it would have worked.
Yeah. So do you think it was a wise move? Personally,
yes.
I think it was a wise move. It seems to make sense to me.
It's the only thing that might be a bad move is because you're no longer promoting the Wii U as a console. You're just talking about the games. Mm. And like, if you're on a big stage, it forces all those people back in and you can talk about the hardware again to a larger audience and try and resell it, rebrand it, do advertising, doesn't make it look like an add-on to the Wii. You know, start that new push. But this signals to me that they're not going to do that. They're just going to sit back and just release first-party stuff and
design their next console.
No, it'd be a while yet.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I think they might bring it out quite soon. But I think it was a wise move for them to go with a Direct instead of a press conference. I think it's interesting that there was lots of cheering and lots of whooping at Sony's conference. Historically, that's generally been the Nintendo conference thing. You get lots of really die-hard Nintendo fanboys and fangirls at the Nintendo conference. And I remember years when Miyamoto came out with a shield and a sword and announced the next Zelda, and you got so much like whooping and cheering from the crowd. And I saw that at the Sony conference this year, but it wasn't really for games. It was for the price of the console and for DRM policies and things like that. So it's interesting that it seems to have shifted over to Sony now, to me, a little bit.
Although it's worth bearing in mind that for the Sony one, it's the last one of the day, and basically outside the press conference building, they have this kind of parking lot with loads of kind of tables and chairs, and they have all these food trucks around the side of it and a bar in the middle, and it's all free. So it's like free food and drink, you know, alcohol as well. So people kind of get a bit beered up first. So it's kind of a bit exaggerated by that.
Yeah, so we're kind of drunk.
A good kind of drunk.
So what do we think about third-party conferences, EA and Ubisoft?
I went to EA's one, and I don't think it was kind of shown on the the kind of live feed, but it's really interesting. Peter Moore came out on stage first, and he was just sort of like kind of getting the crowd going and kind of cracking jokes about Kotaku's writer, kind of putting up a post already saying it's disappointing. And when we just seen Microsoft, you know, going to see EA and seeing someone who's actually charismatic on stage,
yeah,
it was such a difference. It was like, wow, like this guy used to work for Microsoft. Like, how badly do they miss him? Like, you know, he actually had charisma, and
yeah,
you know, their press conference was so much slicker than Microsoft's. It made you kind of excited about the games, whereas Microsoft's one was just kind of an extended set of trailers, and that was it.
I think the presenter can have a lot of influence on the general impression that people take away from those press conferences. I mean, I watched EA's press conference live from home, and you could definitely tell that Peter Moore, he has got charisma on stage, and he's good at talking to a crowd, and everyone seemed, I don't know, like they were truly listening to him. Whereas you're right, Microsoft's conference, you didn't really get that sense that the presenters not necessarily knew how to talk to a crowd. Obviously, they've been trained in that, but it didn't seem like they were connecting with the crowd in the same way that Peter Moore was. So what do we think about the things that EA announced at their conference? Obviously, they started it off with that joke about the Plants vs. Zombies game.
I think that was a good start. That was the biggest surprise.
It was an entertaining start.
Someone actually making a joke and EA being the ones to do it. I was like, all right, well, bloody hell, next gen this.
Yeah, so were there any announcements there at the EA conference that really surprised you or that got you really interested, Phil?
I mean, none of the games are really that surprising. I mean, they've been very conservative, and they're, over the last few years, they're kind of cutting back on the number of games they're making. So I think about 2 years ago, they had 30 titles in that year. And then this year they have 11 games, and it's, you know, when you look at the list, only one or two are new, or, you know, even, I mean, you can't classify Mirror's Edge 2 as new, but it's kind of like slightly different to the just franchises they roll out every year.
Yeah, it's not annual, is it?
No, you can tell it's a Goodwill game where they've put funding for that based upon what they're going to get off of the DICE games.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be. But I'm quite interested in Mirror's Edge 2.
Yeah, anyway, definitely.
I quite enjoyed the first game. And what about the Plants vs. Zombies game, Shane? Are you interested in that, third-person shooter?
It depends. It looks like it might be a digital sort of game, so I think it would be perfectly fine. Mm. And if it's got a good sense of humour like the others have, then...
Yeah.
For an early launch title. And I believe it's Xbox exclusive. From memory.
I can't remember, to be honest. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about Ubisoft then, and Aish Tyler. Did you go to the Ubisoft conference, Phil?
I didn't, but Ubisoft again this year were, for me, the kind of publisher with the most interesting games.
Yeah.
I mean, last year, Watch Dogs was the one which I thought was the most impressive, and this year they had the Division, which was, it's very similar to kind of Watch Dogs, and it seems to me that the three big titles they had, which were Assassin's Creed, Watch Dogs, and The Division, it almost like you, in some places you can't tell them apart. They've all got this kind of electronic
it's the Ubisoft
kind of theme
look.
And the same kind
it
of
is.
Visual style.
You can definitely tell they're running on the same engine.
Mm-hmm. I love that about them. That's one thing I like about Ubisoft. Those games, you can look at it and think, that is a Ubisoft game.
Mm.
It's like a concept that fills throughout all their titles, the way that the HUD is kind of in the game and the kind of the movement and stuff. It's great.
So yeah, I can't say much about the press conference, but the games were really impressive, and you know, especially you know those three I mentioned, all look really. I mean, I've pre-ordered all three of them,
which means a lot coming from you. So I'll take that as very
good
news.
Yeah, it does.
So with the Division, did you actually see it being played in front of you, or was it a pre-done demo?
So yeah, it's kind of a mix at E3, and so with Assassin's Creed, Watch Dogs, and the Division, they were all they were playing them, and you sit and watch. It's kind of traditionally how Ubisoft seemed to do at E3. Basically, the stuff you queue up to go into a room and see, that's always hands off, and then they have a few games, but generally minor games outside, which you can get hands on.
Okay, so. Have you seen the Division demo that was displayed on stage? Because I'm wondering how different it was and whether you just saw the same vertical slice or not.
So I don't know which one they showed on stage, but basically I think it's the same whereby Yeah, they show this guy kind of zooming down into the street, and he sort of brings up the map on the ground in front of him, which looks amazing. I don't know how practical it is, but it looks great. And then they kind of walk off in a little team and, capture a police station. But I think where the demo we were shown differs is that they kind of went on beyond that.
Okay.
And they demoed the kind of tablet stuff, so they kind of show you how this kind of different camera angle comes in. That kind of thing.
Okay.
That seemed to be quite a common theme, especially at Ubisoft's press conference, the integration of a tablet app where you can do something that isn't necessarily the core gameplay component, but you can do something additional, like you can control a drone like you could in a Division. I'm sure that's a Ubisoft almost mandate now, that they have to have...
Well, Xbox One, apparently, you've got to have...
Is an Xbox One
mandate? Xbox One, you've got to have smart glass and have to have something Kinect-based, apparently.
Yeah.
So I can see that spilling over into everything.
But I think the use of it is getting a bit more mature, because last year it was one of the kind of themes which was there, but it was kind of like, at most, just a map. Whereas this year you saw, for example, Watch Dogs, The Division, where it's kind of like a live action view of the gameplay, where, it's actually happening in front of you rather than just like a dot on a map that's moving around. Mm. And, Assassin's Creed had this great thing where you could have, if you're kind of sailing around the Caribbean and you capture a ship, it can kind of go into your fleet, but you don't see that fleet in the game. It's kind of on your tablet, and you can then send the captured ships on missions around the Caribbean to kind of earn money for you. And you can kind of do all that, unlike Smart Glass, which is kind of on while you're playing the game, this is, you can do it from anywhere.
Is it more an app?
I think that's how it works. Like, I'm not sure whether they've confirmed exactly how it works.
Yeah. But so you could do that on the bus, and when you came home to your game, something would have changed in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the same thing with EA's Battlefield 4 Commander mode, where one person can be just on their iPad anywhere in the world and just kind of ordering people around. And then those people just ignore those orders and carry and just kill everyone.
I think I've got a friend that would be really into the Commander mode, because he loves those sort of tactical shooters. Well, more tactical, it's still quite twitch-based, but he hasn't got the reaction speed for it. So the Commander mode, I think, would be perfect for certain people to get into it. I'm glad they've brought that back.
Yeah, that is interesting. I think we've seen the second screen experience being more pervasive, and actually some interesting integration of the second screen experience instead of just a map. Shame for Nintendo that none of those are on the Wii U, though.
Yeah, I know. Irony.
Although, okay. They say that Watch Dogs and Assassin's Creed are going to be on the Wii U, and I'm like, how on earth are they going to actually get that to run?
They're current-gen
cross-platform
games as well, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the Wii U is about similar power to the Xbox 360, supposedly.
Yeah, so they'll just scale it right back.
Yeah. I mean, that's another point as well. We saw lots of games this year that they were announced for next-gen consoles, but they're still current-gen as well, and it's definitely that kind of crossover where companies are making that business decision that they can't just put it on next-gen consoles because it doesn't have the install base yet. So we're seeing lots of games, next-gen games, that are maybe held back a little bit by the fact that they also have to be current-gen as well, like Bungie's Destiny and Watch Dogs and things like that. It'd be quite interesting to see where that goes.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a longer cross-platform gen than you've ever seen before.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
I think you might be right.
You've got another year of it, at least, I think, for the bigger titles, unless both the consoles produce a lot of units and just sell endlessly.
Mm. And their attach rate.
But you've still got, between the Xbox and PlayStation, well, it doesn't mean... It's been generalising a bit, but you've got 140 million consoles there to aim for. Which, now I've said that, I've realised that doesn't make much sense, because, for example, Tomb Raider aimed for about 3% of that user base and missed it. So... Mm. You're probably not going to get that much, but I think we're still looking at a year on those sort of titles where they'll just scale it back as much as possible to get a version out. Stuff like FIFA and EA Sports, they will essentially just be updates. They're not even going to be the new versions. Same on PC. The PC isn't getting the new version of FIFA and stuff. It's just kind of an updated version of the current engine.
Yeah. Okay, it's quite interesting. And the Wii U isn't getting any EA games anymore.
Oh, no. Apparently they've said they're doing something.
Okay.
But I don't know if they will.
Yeah, interesting.
But yeah, okay. The thing I think they're going to be kind of held back most by is this kind of cloud stuff where, if you've got Watch Dogs, and it's going to be on the Xbox 360 as well, that doesn't have all these cloud things, then you can't really push it on. Whereas, like, the Division is only on the next gen consoles, so, you know, they can actually create this whole MMO, but it's not really an MMO kind of game.
Mm, you can really take advantage of that feature of next gen.
Or you can have a Drivatar in Forza.
Some AI that learns how you play.
I think it's just called a ghost in Mario Kart.
Yeah, it was done years and years ago. Yeah, I think it's quite interesting. Xbox One, obviously Microsoft have now reversed their policy on DRM and the console doesn't have to be...
DRM on physical. But we'll talk about it more next podcast. But yeah,
we'll delve deeper into that. But something you said, Phil, about how Microsoft didn't really tell you what their entire vision was for the console at this year's show. They didn't really sell you on it, and I definitely felt that there's lots of things about next-gen games that we're starting to see with things like The Division, where you have this online connected world and you can have someone join through smart glass and stuff like that, that an online console really could have taken advantage of, but Microsoft didn't tell that story at their press conference. What Microsoft didn't do, they didn't say why online is a good thing, like online only is a good thing, and why the games are going to be better because of that. I definitely didn't feel that from their press conference.
It's because they didn't know
what they needed to do. Maybe it's because they really don't know. They don't have a plan.
The policies weren't even made up.
Yeah,
that's why they were quiet about them, because they didn't exist.
Yeah, and they're changing them.
I think they're just chasing the fact that Sony got out 3-4 months before them.
Okay, yeah, sorry, Phil, go on.
I was going to say that. It's kind of striking how the price difference is probably, well, it's almost certainly caused by the Kinect being bundled in the Xbox One, but they basically didn't even talk about Kinect. Like, no one talked about Kinect throughout the whole of E3. It was only demoed in Project Spark to, like, change something, but that was it, you know.
Yep.
Why is the, when you're kind of looking at these two consoles, you know, one's £80 or $100 more than the other one, you know, what's the difference? Okay, one's got Kinect, but what games use it? Almost none.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly it. They haven't sold it. They haven't said, this is why you need the next-gen Kinect with your Xbox One. This is what it brings to your gaming experience or your other experience. They didn't really focus on that. Which is why I didn't think Microsoft's press conference this year was very good. I mean, the games that they showed were interesting, but overall, not quite as good as Sony's press conference, in my opinion.
Should we take a quick break?
Yeah, we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about the games of E3 that we're most excited about. So let's focus on the games that we saw at E3. Obviously, lots of games that we saw are sequels, and we already knew about the games. But there were some new IPs that we saw, some new announcements. Shane, did you see any games at E3 that really excited you?
Yes, because I didn't know they existed. So I'll start with the two that are both on Xbox One.
Okay.
So the first one is Below, which is made by... They only did a quick teaser trailer, but it's... Now, I'm going to go on a tangent here, but can we call them indie if they're published by someone like that? Because indie music, Oasis is indie music, and they sell millions and millions and millions, so have we got to that point where indie doesn't actually mean independent anymore?
In the music scene, indie doesn't necessarily mean independent. Indie is used to refer to a certain style of music, isn't it?
But it comes from independent.
It comes from that style, but now it doesn't mean that, and I feel like it's kind of losing its meaning as well in video game development. It should mean independently developed, i.e. independent of a publisher, but it doesn't seem to mean that anymore. It just seems to mean smaller games, smaller in terms of production values.
Okay, so Below is a semi-independent, semi-indie, part indie, which contains 2/3 of the collective that worked on Sword and Sorcery on the iPhone that I absolutely loved.
Fabulous iPhone game.
So good. If you haven't played that, go and play it. It's called Sword and Sorcery.
It's like Swords and Sorcery, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got W in it. It's a bit... about to say it.
Quirky?
Quirky sounds annoying, but it's...
it's jovial. It's great.
Yeah. It's good, but you should play it. It's a lot of sound-based stuff. It's all pixelated. It's great. This looks like the same, but they've essentially said that it was imagined, the concept, before Demon's Souls. And as they saw Demon's Souls and Dark Souls become popular, they thought, we can actually get the funding to make a game where death isn't seen as a reason not to buy a game.
Yeah.
So they're going to make it really hard, but use the same sort of thing where the more you dig into it, the more you kind of figure out the plot without an actual narrative over the top. And the way the two-thirds, it's not the whole team, not the whole collaboration, but the two-thirds working on Blow, that's got me really excited. Now, that might come to PC, because it was already been developed on that before Microsoft picked it up, and historically, like stuff like Limbo and stuff, you wait a year and it comes out on Steam. So there's always that gamble. But the main one is by Swery, the director from Japan, who did Deadly Premonition, which is my best game of the generation, and his game is episodic and exclusive. And again, the console is annoying, but the fact that they've got two exclusives by people that did two of my favourite games this generation, it's kind of teetering me to go that way. So D4 is that new title. It's going to be episodic, digital only, download.
Could you discern at all what D4, what it was about, what kind of gameplay it's going to have from that short clip that they showed?
It's built on Kinect, which you can see in the trailer, but you can use a controller as well. It's going to be, because of Deadly Premonition had the combat shoehorned in, because basically the producers wanted it in, because no one's going to buy a game that doesn't have guns. So, but this time it looks like he's been able to cut back on it, and he said that essentially he wants people to be able to just sit there, and his phrase is eat popcorn while they're playing it. So there'll be bits where like everyone's quirky in his game while following off the definition. So it's the same sort of dialogue. I mean, when there's combat, it actually comes up saying great and awesome from the thing I've seen. So there's going to be bits of combat, but it's going to be kind of staged. And there's going to be a lot of dialogue trees, and if you select certain options, it goes off at angles. But just his way of writing about stuff and the way he actually creates a character first and then builds a story around it, which is what, you know, Stephen King used to do when in his early days, and that's why a lot of his books then were great, which isn't something video games do, which kind of, I've got an idea where you blow loads of stuff up with this massive gun. All right, then, well, we'll just shoehorn all these characters in. And then the producer says, oh, actually, now we need to make one of them female, because, you know, that's what everyone does now.
Hire a writer now. We've built the game. Hire a writer to sort it out.
It's like hiring. It's like when in Hollywood, where they hire writers out in animated films to write comedy that's off-screen, because they've already made the film. So that's where you get the like, comedy bits where somebody walks off-screen and trips over, because they have to add stuff in to try and get as many laughs as possible.
Yeah, I never knew that.
So D4 and Below, both non-AAA games, which probably says a lot, but my two games of E3 for sure.
Yeah, I think they look really interesting, and I'm not at all surprised that you picked them, like what you like about games. Okay, so Phil, was there anything there that really caught your eye?
There were a couple of games. I know it's a big franchise, but Battlefield 4, they had a demo for 64-player multiplayer. And they're actually going to have a 64-player on both the next-gen consoles. And, you know, I played Battlefield 1942 years and years ago and kind of miss it. And I just kind of seemed to spawn next to a big tank, and then I spent the whole 20 minutes just driving around, blowing stuff up, and no one really killed me. So it was great fun. And the other one was World of Tanks, which is on Xbox 360. So it's this kind of big PC MMO.
It's huge in Russia.
Yeah, it's really popular in Russia, and they just brought it onto Xbox, and you know, it's just on Xbox, and I think they're just targeting the kind of large user base to see if it, you know, if the kind of audience is there for it. But it was actually the only game of E3 where I actually went back to the booth to play it again, because it was kind of fun.
Because you enjoyed it.
Is that going to be free to play?
Yeah, it's free to play.
You kind of pay for colours and stuff on the tanks, something like that.
Yeah, because they just changed their policy, because it used to be, like most games, like free-to-play games, you sort of pay to win, like you pay and you get a better thing. And they've just changed it like 2 weeks ago, so that it's, I think they call it free to win. So you can, all the stuff they sell doesn't actually get you much of an advantage.
Right. It's all it's relatively superfluous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cosmetic.
Yeah, you still need to obviously get kind of earn points and stuff to actually buy the stuff, but you don't need to use real money to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting.
It's the idea that you get a massive user base because it's free, and then if everyone throws a dollar in to buy the colour of tank they want, then you make loads of money off that.
Pink Tank for 99.
Yeah, loads of pink tanks.
Cool. So games with tanks. You seem to enjoy
games with
this
tanks.
Year's.
Yeah.
Games with tanks. I've got to say that I watched the Battlefield 4 demonstration. I was like, oh, typical Battlefield, board, shoot. And then the building collapsed. I was like, oh my god, it looks amazing.
Hey, I'll be getting Battlefield 4 for definite. The third, I mean, it's a shame it's not Bad Company, because Bad Company 2 was such a great game online. And the single player kind of had a tongue-in-cheek, predator-like approach to everything, where it didn't take itself seriously, which was really good. But then it kind of flipped that over when it did, which had more of an effect than you'd normally get in games. But with Battlefield 4, at least they're doing it. I mean, it's going to be low. The destruction seems to have come back a bit more than the third one, and I think that's because they're able to aim at a higher technological level, and they've kind of brought it back in. 32 on 32, I'm glad they're doing that on consoles. It'll be a definite purchase.
Yep, I'm sure it'll be fun. It's a fairly safe bet. okay, so a game that really stood out for me that I hadn't really seen much about before, but I watched an E3 demonstration and it really looked cool. It was an independent game. It's going to be on the PS4 called Daylight. And what really excites me about Daylight is the fact that it's a survival horror game in the true sense. No guns in the game, as far as I'm aware. All you have is your smartphone and the apps that you have on that smartphone and whatever they enable you to do in the game. And you basically have to find your way out of a kind of procedurally generated maze. You wake up in this strange environment. It's very dark. There's no lighting. And it seems like some kind of old mental asylum or whatever it is. It seems like true survival horror. And that gets me excited because I'm sick of all the typical survival horror franchises tending more towards action these days, like Resident Evil.
Isn't that written by a writer for IGN?
Daylight.
Mm-hmm. Jessica Chobot.
Is it?
I mean, if you're talking about a clash of, you know, integrity here, if you're writing, if you're creating a game or writing about games and presenting games.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I might.
Man,
I might
she's already in Mass Effect 3, so she got away with that.
She's doing everything that she possibly can in the games industry. Right, that's quite interesting. I didn't know that she was writing it. I might have got a little. Well, no, I'm still interested. I was going to say I might have got a little less excited for the game then, but no, I'm interested. Maybe she's a good writer. Give her a due. I haven't seen anything she's written before, so maybe she's a really good writer.
I mean, I could be absolutely wrong, but I'm quite positive that maybe some of the people that worked on Fear or Condemned are involved with the studio now that's doing it.
Yeah,
which is a
yeah.
great positive. But I mean, from looking at the demo anyway, there's nothing to be written about the game because it's. You know, it's
no.
procedurally generated. It's ripping off other stuff.
That's
so I'm guessing she's just put a name on it and said, give me some money and I'll promote it for you.
It seems very simple, and it's not going to be like, I don't imagine it'll be like a 10-hour long experience or anything. It'll just be something you come to every now and then just to experience.
Outlast
in short
better.
Bursts. Outlast look better?
Have you heard about it?
Outlast. No,
you should check that out. It's similar, survival
okay.
horror.
Yeah.
But it was make. I mean, Nick on our site wrote about it. It made him jump at E3, even when he's on the show floor. And all the previews he suggested it's even scary when people stood around
that,
in
is that,
daylight.
Is that the one where you've got kind of like an entirely hairless, like giant monster man that's chasing you around?
Bits and pieces, like yeah. There's no weapons, and it's kind of riffs on Wreck and stuff where you have like a night vision camera.
Yeah. Generally, I'm interested in the survival horror games that I saw at this year's E3 that looked kind of different and that didn't have guns in it. I was going to come on to The Evil Within that we saw a demonstration of at E3. Not entirely sure if that's got guns in it, but I'm excited about
guns.
That because it has got guns.
The director says that...
Shane, you're just killing my excitement for all
of
these
games. Director said that it can only be survival horror if it has guns.
Right, okay.
He says it's a horror game if it's got no guns. It's survival horror with a gun. Because survival
Jesus.
Horror means you can fight back.
Oh, okay, right. Well, I suppose that makes sense. Well, you could fight back with melee weapons, maybe, but...
I think you're limited ammo. I don't think you can run around with a minigun in it, but there is guns.
Anyway, I'm still excited about The Evil Within. I think it looks cool. It's been directed by Shinji Mikami, who directed Resident Evil 4, which is a fantastic game, and it had guns in it, so, you know, survival horror can be done with guns. It was a good action game. I just think it looks really good. It looks really dark and horrible and sinister, and it's kind of got that atmosphere that the Resident Evil games haven't had with 5 and 6. I didn't really feel the same, that they had the same atmosphere of dread and tension that Resident Evil 4 had.
Well, I think
had,
that suffered from a Japanese team trying to be American, whereas this is a Japanese, this is now an American-funded Japanese development being very Japanese.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, and you get that feeling. It feels kind of like when I remember looking at Resident Evil 4 previews before I played the game,
mm-hmm.
it looks very much like that. It looks very interesting, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
They're using id Tech as well, aren't they?
It is. Quite surprising. Modified id Tech 5, apparently. Mm-hmm. Which is
I guess Bethesda must be trying to sell that out again. Yeah.
Yeah, so Bethesda are publishing it, aren't they? I believe.
Yes, they are, yeah.
Fabulous. So that's going to be current-gen and next-gen as well, so that's one of those crossover games. If I have a next-gen console by the time it comes out, I'll probably play on that. But yeah, it looks really interesting. Not entirely sure about the plot yet, I'm not entirely sure what it is, but the demo that I saw looked really tense. It looked like it wasn't really that much of an action demo. It was about stalking and hiding and stealth, really, and avoiding monsters wherever you could, which is kind of I quite enjoy that for some reason. Not entirely sure why, but I do. So yeah, those survival horror games I saw looked really interesting. I thought it was interesting that we're seeing lots of games really bring back survival horror in a big way at this year's E3. So any other games that we saw that we're interested in?
Knack. Not that I'm ultra interested in it, but it's not AAA. I mean, it's a launch title developed by Sony and the guy that did the architecture for the console. But just to actually do just a straight up old school PlayStation 1 to era platformer and to actually present it as a main piece. I thought that was interesting. I thought it was quite a nice change.
I do, yeah. I think it's nice that, it seems like a kid's game in its premise.
Yeah, very simple, nice and easy to play.
It looks enjoyable. I'm not entirely sure what the game is about. It seems to be a bit of a tech demonstration as well, with the fact that you can have lots of particles and things on the PS4, and it seems to do that quite effectively.
I think it came from that.
Yeah, it was born of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks relatively harmless, and who knows, it might be the best game come next generation launch.
I think it could win a lot of hearts just because it's not stuff blowing up.
Yeah, it seems different.
That's it. You just don't put stuff blowing up and tanks blowing up and talk about emotion and experience when you're talking about it, and you're already onto a winner.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be, like, the guy who's developing it, Mark Cerny, the lead on its development, he seems very passionate about it, and he seems like a rather interesting chap. So I'm quite looking forward to Knack, actually, surprisingly. So yeah, anything else? I must say that The Division did look quite interesting
to
me.
Yes, it did look
great. Lots of games this year seem to have that whole, show trailer. Oh my god, this amazing co-op game. Look at this single player co-op game I'm playing. Not single player, obviously, because it's co-op. But look at this co-op game I'm playing. And then, oh my god, zoom out. And actually, it's multiplayer on next gen. Oh my god, there's some other people over there. It seems to be taking that Dark Souls kind of idea where multiplayer is kind of just integrated in the background and you just seamlessly transition into it.
It was ahead of the curve on that, really, wasn't it?
Dark Souls.
Yeah, the fact you couldn't pick who invaded your game.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, yeah. So it's a really interesting implementation of multiplayer, and I think it's quite good that we're seeing it across all these different games, because it does work very well in Dark Souls, and I could see it having other very good implementation across these other types of games.
Yeah, Watch Dogs had the exact same thing, where you could sort of jump into someone else's game and trying to kind of hack them, and then they jump back into your game to kind of get revenge.
Yeah.
It's very Dark Souls.
That's something really interesting, and yeah, it's definitely very Dark Souls, and it's something that we haven't seen much of yet. So that's quite cool. That's pervading lots of games for the next gen.
I'm surprised Valve went ahead of the game with Left 4 Dead 2, because they did the multiplayer mode where you could take control of the kind of the main monsters.
The monsters,
rather than zombies,
yeah,
and I was surprised they didn't do it where you could just jump into other people's games online and take over the monsters and just dick about. You know, if there's a certain option in the game where you allow it. Yeah.
Could you do that in Dead Space 3?
Yeah, no, I don't
sure
know, I never
that.
Played it.
No,
but surely stuff has blown up too much for you to take control of stuff.
And maybe it was a microtransaction that you had to pay to
what,
to
you
enable it.
Actually played the microtransaction.
No, you paid to allow people into your game or something, I don't know. But I think there might have been something in Dead Space 3. But yeah, I think it's interesting use of multiplayer, and it's something different, something that hasn't been worn out as a trope in video game design yet.
I think the dream, if I was a game developer, was that when you load up a game, you do not see a title screen. So there's no more select single player multiplayer. You know, you don't have to stop stuff to look at the map, because you press a button, you hold a button, and it comes up within the game. And it's kind of, so I think it's idea of, you'll see less and less of those sort of screens as things get broken down. You'll probably see more and more games that have loading screens where it has some sort of dialogue along the bottom. Because the Call of Duty 4 did it, yeah. It's loads more loading quotes.
Yeah.
I think everything has them now, actually.
Everyone loves quotes on loading screens, don't they? Especially if they're philosophical and don't really have that much to do with what you've been doing in the game.
Yeah. They're just taken from a textbook somewhere.
Yeah.
I think
these games aren't educationally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think FIFA had one of the best ones where you could just kick the ball about for a bit.
Yeah,
actually do something.
Yeah. I think, not necessarily game, but I think in terms of next-gen consoles, it'd be quite interesting to see if they are as seamless and as quick as everyone's claiming they are, or the companies at least are claiming they are at the moment. I mean, they're claiming that you can... Well, there was... Sony released a video that showed off their user interface with the PlayStation.
But the guy lives in the shed.
With the guy who lives in the shed, yeah, and his relationship to Sarah and the dude who plays
Killzone. Yeah, that guy was weird.
Everyone seemed to have very weird smiles in that video. Mm-hmm. That might have just been me, but everyone seemed to have slightly like forced smiles.
Just like, he lives in the shed, and he's just like $60 for a game. Yeah, whatever.
Just really happy about it. Like, yeah, I'll press that button. I'll just download that without thought for my bank balance. Mm-hmm.
It'd be cheaper going down to the shop and getting it for $40, but no, it's up there $60 right now.
But Sony are claiming that you'll be able to download games like that. That you will download like a portion of the game, the first portion of the game, and that you'll be able to play it straight away, and that you won't have to wait 6 or 7 hours like you do now, depending upon your connection speed with the PlayStation Network Store. So I think that the whole like seamless user interface and speed of being able to jump between the different experiences you can have on these consoles is really something that they seem to be pushing. Obviously, Apple have really nailed it with the iPhone and their iOS devices. It's really quick and easy to get between your apps on that. So I think it'll be interesting to see if that actually does happen or whether they were lying in that video.
If either of them drops the ball on it, they're going to suffer because they've both basically displayed that you can whip around within, have two games. I mean, with Microsoft, they kind of hinted at the idea that you can have two games open, one in the background, pause permanently, and then run away on another. And other stuff is like, if this stuff is a bit... I mean, when I boot on my 360 now, it just goes on the loading screen forever, and I have to go into recents and load an app and then jump back into the main screen. Because it's old.
I have to kick mine a bit to make it stop it making a horrible vibrating noise from the fan.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to take an age to switch on as well.
And they don't have the benefit of people updating every year or two to just keep the speed going. So if they're both not ultra slick, I mean, people are going to be disappointed. And there's a chance people are going to be disappointed graphically, because a lot of stuff on the stage was running on PCs, and last year Watch Dogs was shown and it looked great. So they've kind of spoiled us by the fact they've already shown us what everything's going to look like before we even get to play it. And if it's downgraded a bit, everyone's going to be like, well, it's not... I think there could be a bit of a backlash where loads of people...
Good.
Yeah, but those people get really excited by it, and then it starts this kind of discontent comes through of people thinking, well, it's was it worth it? Is this really next gen?
I think you touched upon this on a previous podcast, Shane, where you said that people won't be that excited for next-gen graphics because they're so used to seeing game trailers where they use CG to promote the game and they don't actually use the in-game graphics for current-gen.
Yeah, it's like Killzone.
So we're kind of just getting to that standard now with in-game graphics.
It's like Killzone with that incredible opening where they go through the city and then as soon as they land, all the smoke goes up and you can't see it. And I think the rest of the game will look great, but it's not going to be like that opening scene that they showed off straight away. You've always got to keep that in mind.
It's interesting in FIFA, that was the kind of game where you could see the power of next gen kind of most obviously, because the crowd, instead of these kind of like 2D cardboard figures, it was actually like an individual person, which sounds like a silly detail, but like when you can see the difference, it was so obvious, and that was actually running on an Xbox One console, and the kind of guy, like producer, sort of opened the cabinet to actually show it, to kind of make the point that it's actually running on real hardware.
Well, that's good to know, especially because of all the stories that came out about a lot of PCs for third-party games.
I think that's the crowd design in FIFA games. It's one of those things that, like, from the previous console generations, you've always known that they couldn't do it. They'd strive to do it, and they'd do things to, like, mask it or whatever and give the illusion that each individual crowd member was animated individually, but they could never do it. So it's quite interesting. I think we're getting to that stage now with console power where we could do some of those things. I mean, hair physics seems to be another one. We're finally getting to the stage where we can have some amount of hair physics in games. And it seems like relatively superfluous detail, but it's just... I don't know, it's something that next gen's going to be able to do that current gen can't, that that seems quite...
I think we're going to see a boost in everything other than game mechanic, which is going to stay very much the same.
Yeah, that's the general trend as well. Mm-hmm. But explosion mechanics will get better and gun mechanics will get better. So
number of zombies on screen.
Number of zombies on screen will triple.
Do you reckon we'll have more or less red barrels perfectly placed?
I think that's got to at least triple.
Yeah, triple red barrels stacked up.
Fantastic. So let's bring it back to the actual games. Which console manufacturer did you think had the best first-party lineup for their next-gen machine?
Xbox.
Sony or Microsoft?
Microsoft.
Microsoft?
Yeah, definitely Microsoft.
You think Microsoft?
Sony's is. If you look at the lineup, I mean, Drive Club, they're doing a PSN Plus version, and at E3, they had a 35% build, and a lot of people just said, you know, look at the previews, and Forza just wiped the floor with it. And that was being touted as something massive in February. You've got
Drive Club's been developed for years and years, though, hasn't
it?
Well,
the concept...
All right, the concept has been swilling around in someone's head for years.
Knack, I mean, again, it's going to... People that want an old school platform, that's great, but it's not going to woo the crowd in that way. I think Killzone is kind of their gamble on it.
Yeah, and Killzone's quite... I think it's quite a known quantity as well, though, and it's quite a well-known name now. It's quite synonymous with the Sony brand Killzone.
But it's also synonymous with being underachieving for what it attempts to do.
Yeah, yeah. I think in terms of just having a well-rounded... and a sound launch lineup in terms of the business, what people will be excited about, not necessarily myself. I think Sony needs an Uncharted or something. I mean, because they have lots of independent support, as we saw when they did that cool bit in their press conference where they got lots of independent developers up on stage. Each one had a screen playing their own individual game on PS4. That was a really cool thing, and they really, like... That was Sony's message, that we are committed to independent development. You can self-publish as an indie developer on PS4, so that's really cool. I think they're going to have lots of indie support. But I think they needed something else there, something quite big to counteract.
Yeah, they won't sell consoles outside of E3.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, they won't sell they've got niche markets. I'm excited about that kind of stuff, but in terms of the business, I think Microsoft have the bigger launch lineup. They've got things like Titanfall as an exclusive. Which is obviously a big game.
Yeah, I think Microsoft are going to come out... out of the two, I would expect Microsoft to be more likely to come out with more exclusives before launch.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's quite interesting. I read an article before on Tech Investor News about how Xbox One's pre-orders have just jumped past PlayStation 4's pre-orders after Microsoft announced that they're dropping DRM. So I think that kind of indicates where people are in terms of their preference for exclusive games on the console.
I would argue that that's misinformation.
You think?
Yeah, because the US Amazon stores split PS4 into 4 or 5 bundles, and the Xbox is only one.
Yeah.
So I reckon if you actually look at the top 10 or 20, you'll probably find PS4.
Well, the
Xbox pre-orders have apparently... We know the figures haven't been declared. There's been reports and people saying in retail this has gone up a lot in the past 24 hours.
Yeah, yeah. It's worth qualifying that this website says that this is based on Amazon.com figures for pre-sales of Xbox One and Sony's PlayStation 4. But you might be right. It might be misinformation. Left some stuff out. Obviously, you don't just pre-order at Amazon.
Yeah.
I would have to agree maybe that Microsoft has quite an interesting launch lineup. Those two games that you pointed out before, Shane, D4 and Below, look really interesting to me. What did we think of Rise? Did you get hands-on with Rise, Phil?
Nick did, but I didn't. It was kind of one of the games where, in the Microsoft press conference, it was the game that looked the worst, because it just looked so kind of linear, like there was just this path where you just walk down and, you know, all these kind of like cutscenes and... It just didn't look interesting, but Nick got hands on. He said it was much better than it looked.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, to me, watching the demo, it looked like it would be boring to play. Graphically, I was watching quite a blurry stream, but graphically, it looked like it was quite impressive, and it looked like it was very much engineered to be very cinematic in the way that things were framed. But it didn't look like it would be very fun to play. It looked like a series of QTEs that would be quite boring.
Yeah, Nick said it's more like Batman when you actually play it.
He said
the trailer's totally different. You know, it kind of it undersells what it does. Mm. And people that played it seem a bit more... No, they're not blown away by it, but they've come away thinking, oh, it's all right, rather than thinking, oh, it's rubbish.
The game which I thought from the conference would be good was Dead Rising 3, but that was the only demo I've been in all the E3s I've been to where I was just bored and wanted it to finish, and other people in the room were just like yawning, and it was just the same thing over and over again. It's like, oh wow, loads of zombies, and you can like run around and kill them. And there's a kill count in the top left hand corner. It gets like 500 in 20 minutes, and it was just so tedious. You know, I was so excited about seeing it, and then I was just like, oh wow, it's the kind of poster child for next gen gaming just being the same with like more things.
I mean, the original ones were similar like that, but they had a kind of a over-the-top, joking, tongue-in-cheek, colourful, bright colour palette where everything was just daft. But if you're trying to be serious, if you're taking away the part that made it funny, then and you're just trying to take the core mechanic.
It's like they say it's going to be darker, but then in the demo, the guy's like dressed up in a big shark outfit, and like so it doesn't really match up.
A franchise to kind of be dark in the past, and it doesn't really seem like one that would be suited to going dark necessarily.
Yeah, it's not that at all.
Yeah, it seemed like a tech demo to me, watching from afar. It seemed like obviously the tech is cool. They can get lots of things on screen, but if they don't have something backing that up to make it interesting, to make the scenarios interesting or what you're doing interesting, then it's a bit redundant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what about Titanfall? Obviously, that Microsoft finished their conference on Titanfall. Big Xbox One exclusive developed by Respawn, Infinity Ward guys who developed the Modern Warfare series. So what did you think of Titanfall?
Did you get to see any more of it, Phil, outside of the stage?
No, it was one of these games where it's just the queue was always so long that I never got in. You know, a lot of these games on the Tuesday, it's a really long queue and you can't get in because all the kind of IGNs and kind of GameSpot, they all want to get their stuff done on the first day. So you kind of like wait till the Thursday when it's like much, much quieter, mm-hmm. when the queues are kind of non-existent. But even on Thursday, I was just like, I can't be bothered to sit in a queue for 45 minutes to watch it. So yeah, I didn't get to see it.
Okay.
See, I thought it was relatively underwhelming in terms of its trailer. Trailer are quite boring, but lots of reports I've read said it's very fun to play, and the mechs are quite cool.
Yeah, it's going to be multiplayer only, and I think they're trying to... Microsoft want it to be the next kind of poster child of Call of Duty.
Yeah, they want it to be the next online show. Well, they're hedging the bets, really, aren't they? Because they've got really all of the big next-gen online shooters, obviously, apart from Killzone.
And I want to make a quick comment before we take a break, and that's just that... I'd be really disappointed, and it seems stupid that we should even have to say it, but this next generation needs dedicated servers for all games. If we're paying for service, and all games don't have dedicated service, this isn't next generation at all, because it should happen now, and now, especially because Sony are paying by the wall, and both of them have the cloud in different ways, then there's got to be dedicated service for everything dynamically. You can't just have peer-to-peer all the time. Especially in games like this. I mean, they said Titanfall's going to have dedicated servers, but it seems weird that Microsoft didn't come out of the press conference with a massive PowerPoint slide saying, dedicated servers for all games, you know, no mucking about anymore, this is the real deal. That would sell people. And so, I don't know why they didn't. I'm guessing that there's a clause where only people they say can get it, I don't know. But dedicated servers is a must.
Well, Microsoft said that they have
300,000 dynamic servers to...
Yeah, something like that. So you would think that they have the capacity for it now.
They do. It's just whether they charge people too much for them to do it. And I hope they don't, because we're already paying to play multiplayer, so we should be funding it as it is.
It should be. That's a war cry I'll get behind, Shane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guys, let's take a short break, and then we'll come back and talk about the controllers. So obviously you were there and you got hands-on with these things. Which was your favourite controller, Xbox Ones or the PlayStation 4s?
Well, the kind of current Xbox 360 controller, to my mind, is kind of like the best one that's been made. It's so much better than the PS3 one. The PS3 one has some really obvious flaws in my mind, like the triggers aren't really triggers, the kind of grips are a little bit too short, the thumbsticks are A, in the wrong place, and B, too tall, and C, they're kind of shaped in a way that your thumb can just slip off the side. So not ideal, but, and that was the kind of one thing where I got kind of excited about the PS4 after the press conferences, and I thought, well, the controller, like, do I really want to play, these games with that controller? But when I actually got hands-on, they fixed almost every single thing. So, the thumbsticks are still in the same place, but they kind of feel higher up on the pad, somehow. And, the sticks themselves have this kind of lip around them. They're kind of lower, so your thumbs don't slip off, and the triggers are actual triggers. The Xbox One controller, it's kind of similar. You've got the kind of rumble through the triggers, which is quite nice. I kind of feel like I need to get, more hands-on with the Xbox One controller, because I have this kind of nagging suspicion they might have kind of ruined it in some way.
Over-engineered.
But, yeah, but certainly, like, if you didn't like the PS3 controller, then, sort of the PS4 one shouldn't be any problems at all.
That's interesting. Every report that I've read says that the PS4 controller was really comfortable, but they're relatively skeptical about the Xbox One controller. Because I watched a Microsoft promotional video about the Xbox One controller and all the things that they've done to find the perfect controller, and all the engineering that's gone into it and all the prototypes, like the millions of pounds that they've spent, and then everyone seems to be relatively lukewarm towards it.
Yeah, I think the main thing which kind of gave me that impression was that I think the distance between the trigger and the shoulder button on the Xbox One it seems further apart, because when I was playing FIFA, in FIFA you often switch between the shoulder button and the trigger, like, really frequently.
Yeah.
And when I was playing it, I felt like I had to sort of move my finger kind of away from the pad, up and then back towards the pad to kind of get around the top of it. Whereas on the PlayStation One, I think it's kind of a quicker, the triggers are smaller, so you can quickly flick between one and the other. So I think that, if anything, is the thing to watch out for.
Okay, that's interesting. Did you get to use the PS4's touchpad?
It wasn't... they didn't have it on anything. I don't really know what it does. I don't think we really know yet.
I don't think they do.
But yeah, it wasn't enabled on any of the games I saw.
Yeah, okay, cool. That's interesting. Then the DualShock, is this a DualShock 4 now?
Yeah,
DualShock 4. Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. They seem to have fixed lots of the problems that people have with the PS3 controller. I mean, I'm playing The Last of Us right now, and the PS3 controller is annoying me. I wish I could plug in my Xbox 360 controller and play with that, because it's so much more comfortable to play with. So yeah, that's good. How about the next gen Kinect? Did you get hands on or wave on or whatever you want to call it with that?
Oh, it's funny, because every single demo unit there had the Kinect sitting on top of the Xbox One unit, but like no games actually had it. There was a demo area for Project Spark where there was some, I think I can just speech recognition, but apart from that, like, no game had it. None at all.
that's quite dire, considering it's going to be with every console. Yeah. Okay. So you didn't get hands on with it. You didn't get any technical demonstrations about how it's better.
There was a demo where they were sort of showing, oh, there's five people on the stage, and look, you can see all their wrists and whatever. But apart from that, nothing.
I can't.
Which is a big change from the last 2 years, where Kinect, like, it was a big thing, and they had. I think it was last year or 2 years ago, they had Microsoft at their booth. They had this whole kind of like circular thing where you could sort of go in and you could go into one of like eight different Kinect demos. Mm-hmm. And they had sort of Forza demo where you kind of tilt your head and it changes the camera angle, all this kind of stuff. But this year, Kinect was almost nowhere to be seen.
I'm concerned game-wise it's going to become the gamepad and it's just a gimmick. In fact, I'm just going to call it out as a gimmick, because
I think it already is.
With the Kinect, like, even when you're using the UI, if you cannot make it quicker than using a controller, people will not use it. So if I have to move my hands apart rather than just going left bumper, up, down, left, right, and get my game straight away, rather than just pissing about with everything, then, I mean, speech recognition, if you said, like, snap this, that might make sense because you're using a game, you want to snap some on the side, but all the hand control stuff, Kinect is just basically a speaker. I can't see, unless somebody does something amazing, but then they'd have to build a game around what it can do.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if anyone's going to take that risk.
Maybe some of the stuff around, if you can think of things that kind of like the operating system level. So if you're playing a game and I could just say, is Shane online? Or what time is the Dallas Cowboys match going to come on? Like it can go and do stuff for you in the background without you having to stop playing.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff, you know, that kind of speech recognition side task time, but all the hand wave stuff, the UI stuff, I just find pointless when you're just going to use the pad because you're already holding it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think to some extent, the handheld controllers that we use, they have been refined and iterated upon so much that they're really comfortable, they're really ergonomic, they're really well designed now, and they work really well, and we're used to using them. And Kinect is kind of an all motion controls, really, are kind of at a disadvantage in as much as they're new technologies, relatively new technologies, and they're not quite as well refined. So I'm quite interested to see if Microsoft actually have really refined this new Kinect so that it is really responsive, it does pick up people, it can do the things that they were claiming that the original Kinect can do, because I think they can do some interesting gameplay stuff with it if it is truly responsive. I mean, part of the problem with the old Kinect was that it didn't work very well.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt, anyway. And I always feel like Kinect is something that my granddad could use, that my parents can use who don't really play that many games. The controller as it is at the moment, the handheld controller, isn't. They won't be able to use that. It's too confusing, and you need to have grown up using that. So I think that if Microsoft do get Kinect right, I think it's good for a general, like, wider audience than we currently use.
If it's just the fact that everyone's got to pay an extra $100 or £80 for it that's an issue.
That is
true. That's the thing that is bumping the price up, especially because Sony back in February announced what's in the console. Microsoft, I don't think, have 100% announced, but generally, if you work out from a pure tech perspective, then the PlayStation 3 could be up to 30% more powerful. Again, whether that actually means anything is only going to be seen in the games when they come out. But if you're putting the price up because of Kinect and also downgrading parts of the machine, surely now the architecture is the same. If Destiny comes out and it clearly looks better on one than the other, or it could happen. But at the same time, the only thing I'm going to add in quickly before we start to wrap up is that if you look at a lot of feedback, like Digital Foundry articles, the games that were running on the Xbox hardware, the first party ones, were 60 frames per second, 1080p, and the Sony ones weren't. They were 30 frames per second. And if we're going into next gen, there's been an expectation of it needs to be 60 frames per second at launch so it can downgrade over time to keep
up. As you strain it.
Yeah, but if you just jump straight in at 30, it's kind of like, oh. So it's weird that apparently there's something I've read, it's been said a lot that Microsoft are kind of trying first party that it has to be 60 frames per second as a thing, which I think is a really clever thing to do if they are, because
that's quite a good policy.
If screenshots don't look as good, but when people see it in motion, and they're probably thinking more people look at YouTube and stuff now than read, so they're probably thinking stuff in motion, like Killer Instinct stuff, will look much better.
Yeah, I would sacrifice a little bit of visual quality for higher frame rate. Anyway, so let's wrap it up there. That's it for episode 24. If you want to let us know what you thought about this year's E3, head on over to thunderboltgames.com and check out the forums. Or alternatively, contact us on Twitter @_thunderbolt or email us at podcast@thunderboltgames.com. From me, it's goodbye. From Shane.
Goodbye.
And from Phil.
Goodbye.